Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for tuning in today. And I want to remind you that just because we discuss a topic that has some interest to you, whether it's a tax strategy or whether perhaps it's a syndication opportunity, please don't go undertake any action involving your finances without first checking with your existing advisors, legal, tax, real estate mentors, investment advisors, etc., etc. And if you don't have advisors that understand the four-way stop of real estate taxation, retirement planning taxation, private partnership syndications, and zero tax math, well, then you're more than welcome to go to our BAPlannerShow.com website and complete at least this first step. Step one, it's a client profile form. And if you submit that, then you can go to the link right next to the form link there towards the top and schedule a call. And we'll be happy to spend some time with you on the phone to help you understand how we might be able to help sync up with your goals and objectives. Most people that connect with us are looking to invest in the real estate private partnership syndications because it has been historically, it's been one of the best performing asset classes in terms of allowing perhaps allowing you to catch up if you're behind on your retirement wealth. And there's, I don't know of any other asset class that stacks the deck more to your liking than perhaps other options might be in the market. I want to congratulate you. It's been, a little over a month, maybe a month and a half, since we talked about the level of the U.S. cumulative deficit, and your share has gone up. It's now $266,951 per shareholder. I mean, per taxpayer. I'm sorry. You might as well think of it that way. And if we look back on March 7th, the last time that I brought it up, let's see, does this article I have from back then tell us? I want to say it was like 240,000. Let's keep skimming that article. Well, in any event, I'm being facetious, obviously. There's nothing to be congratulated for on this particular topic. It's amazing to me how fast it keeps going up. I think most Americans just, the numbers are so big, they boggle the mind, and it's like, what are we going to do? Nobody's really doing much of anything in terms of those that could make a difference. Most of our politicians are worried about getting reelected more so than changing policies, systemic changes, big changes to policies that it's going to take to get the train turned around. And I don't know, again, there's assorted plans, assorted strategies that one could undertake, but none of them are, all of them are a bitter pill. There's nothing that's easy, nothing that's going to take immediate effect, and the problem is we're getting closer and closer to the 2029 or 2030 timeline where by that point we will have spent down the rest of the discretionary piece of the annual budget, and we will not be able to cover 100% of the interest on the debt. Or I suppose we could, but that means we're going to have to quit spending or cut spending on other fronts, and it's not nearly as desirable to do that. And of course, that's on top of the fact that the Social Security Trust Fund is on a path to becoming insolvent by, I believe it's the year 2033. And what will happen if we don't take action now or before we get to that point, that can turn that train around. Again, that's a separate train. Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, that's Maya McGinnis is the director or executive director of that organization. She's in the news a lot these days with these deficits growing at record pace. But anyway, the CRFB pegs the reduction in your Social Security benefits. If we mess around and don't take care of the trust fund, there will be an, it's already passed into legislation, there will be an automatic benefit cut of 23%, or put it in dollar terms, $17,400 on a dual income family, so husband and spouse that are both collecting Social Security. Overall, it's going to cut $17,400 off. It's going to cut $13,100 off of a single income, single Social Security recipient couple. So, you know, as the CFRB says, we've known since about 1990 that Social Security was sort of heading towards insolvency by the mid-2030s. But it went from something you got to save for your grandkids to something you got to save for your kids to something that you now need to save for your grandparents, because today's retirees will be 72 years old when the program goes insolvent. So today's 57-year-olds will be reaching their normal retirement age when it's insolvent. That's rather striking, but I would tell you there's probably 57-year-olds out there that are thinking, well, you know, it's not going to affect me that soon. But I don't know. You know, hopefully you're not relying on your Social Security to live a comfortable retirement. And if you are, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but you need to be aware of the tax train that's coming and collaterally the benefit train that's coming or not coming. It's getting cut. It's going to be a smaller version, and take action accordingly. And if you've got retirement plan money that you're counting on living on, you better wake up and smell the coffee, as the old expression goes, because the tax rates are going to go up. It's not political. In other words, it's not the Democrats. It's not the Republicans. It's the math. And you're going to see tax rates increase. You may see new taxes even. We had an article we talked about on yesterday's show about how that the state of Washington has started a payroll tax component to collect funds. It's only 0.58 or 1%. That's all it is. Can't affect you much, at least for now. But yeah, when's the last time? It's, by the way, it's for long-term health care, or it includes long-term health care coverage. When's the last time you've seen your medical costs go down? So which direction are they going? Going up. And which direction does that mean the taxes will likely follow? It's going to be more than 0.58 of 1% eventually. It's like so many taxes that start there. I mean, heck, the Social Security back in the day when it was first brought into law was hardly a thing. now most people that make, I forget where the line is, but let's say $60,000, they pay more FICA and Medicare tax than they do in the income tax. It's crazy. It's gone up so high. But in any event, Social Security is going to be insolvent in 2033, and if I'm not mistaken, Medicare gets there even faster. And I don't think this article, by the way, I'm reading from 2 or 3 weeks ago. So in any event, Medicare, I think, is going insolvent here in another 3 or 4 years. It's faster than Social Security, if I recall correctly. In any event, okay, well, let's do this. Let's go look at another couple of articles. Well, I'll tell you what, since we're on the topic of the debt, the deficit, the cumulative debt that we borrowed to cover deficits, let's take a look at the up-to-the-second numbers out on the U.S. Debt Clock site. It's such a nice site for keeping up with the real-time changes that are going on in assorted financial metrics that are federal, and then there's also a state debt clock page, and there's a world debt clock page. Those are all linked to the U.S. debt clock page, and then they also have a link to a time machine where you can go back in time and see what these metrics look like, and you can go forward to the year, I believe it's 2028, and that'll be a shocker for you. But anyway, the current U.S. national debt. Now, this is the part that we will admit to. We don't talk about the unfunded liability, or most people don't. We're going to mention it here in a second. But the one that we admit is out there is $34,628,000,000,000. Over the half, or over the 500 million mark, so it's closer to 34,629,000,000. Again, if I back up to, let's see, it was March 7th, I believe, and that number was 34.4 trillion was the number. So it's gone up considerably since we last visited this topic back first week of March. February 21st was the date of that article. So what is that? 34.6 minus 34.4, that's $200 billion. And let's see, we're borrowing debt at the rate of about $8.5 billion a day, I believe, is the current number. So let's see, February 21st, we're about 45 days out, so 45 times 8. Let's just use $8 billion. That's $360 billion. Does that tie out? It's close. So amazing how fast this grows. And again, the debt per citizen, that's per man, woman, or child, is $102,919. The debt per taxpayer is more than twice that, $266,951. So we've definitely make it harder on those that follow us, our kids, grandkids, etc. More strikingly, the debt to GDP ratio, according to U.S. Debt Clock, now, as I mentioned before, various economists or various think tanks, white paper studies, you know, depends on all the assumptions that they're each using. It seems like each group has their own set of metrics, but GDP, let's take a look at the debt to GDP ratio back in 1960 was 53.04%. I can't remember, there was something that had occurred back then. That was my birth year, so you'll have to forgive me if I don't remember what it was, but that was high. I don't know if we were still paying off the debt that we borrowed to fund WW2 back in the day. Could have been. But by 1980, we had whittled it down to 34%, 34.5% of GDP. And by the year 2000, it had gone back up past the 50%. It was at 58%. And now it is sitting at 122% of GDP. You don't hear the congressman anymore when you ask him what they think about the proposed legislation that they may be supporting, where they used to say, well, you know, we're only at 60% of GDP. You know, that's not a bad rate. We can handle that much debt to GDP. Don't hear him saying that now. And we're on our way to 200%. If you fast forward out to the mid-2030s, we're going to be right up there in the 150% range, if not past it. We'll actually be past it if we continue to rack up $2 to $3 trillion a year deficits. It's crazy. In any event, when you look at the four largest budget components, the Medicare, Medicaid components, the largest at $1.755 trillion. Social Security is next at $1.4 trillion. Defense is just slightly ahead currently of the interest that we pay on debt. It's at $873 billion. And lastly, at the moment, interest is almost $799 billion, and that will pass defense spending by the end of the year. We'll be up in the $1.1 trillion range, if I remember the latest projection. And that's not just Nathan Ross opining on the sad state of affairs. That's coming from CBO even. I believe their latest 10-year forecast pegged basically the same numbers, give or take. But in any event, it's just crazy what the debt situation's turned into. And with few exceptions, there's not a whole lot of folks in Congress that are savvy to what's going on. One such party is a congressional representative, or in the House of Representatives, in other words, David Swikert. He's a Republican from Arizona. He's got a lot of videos on YouTube if you Google that name, Swikert, and we've pulled a few of his over to our video page under the resources tab on the baplannershow.com site, and you can go listen to him explain the math, show you some copious charts that depict just how bad off we are, and we'll continue to add some of his more succinct presentations. I just wish we had more representatives that understood just how fast the train is moving down the tracks. Well, let's do this. I went over the break time. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words. Better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, When's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com, Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were talking about more updates, news, etc. on the federal deficit that we're more than a little behind the eight ball on. And I did not mention the unfunded mandate and how far negative we are there. The let's see here, the amount, if you look at that, and these are all the provisions that we've already approved or passed, and they're going to come to bear at some point over future years. There's different, you know, indexes on Social Security, Medicare, and just about everything in the federal budget. I mean, I know there's, I don't think there's one federal recipient of funding dollars that doesn't raise their current year budget by 20 or 30%, because they know if they don't do that, they won't get even what their budget was this year. And I had a client at one point that used to be a DOD, a Department of Defense, worked for a contracting firm that worked tightly with DOD, where the Department of Defense had to include their company's projections into their budget request. And he told me, he said, you know, it was an automatic 30% increase, or we knew, you know, we wouldn't have any funding. Basically, you might go back, but you're sure not going to get what you had in the current year. So in any event, but if you add the unfunded mandate, it puts us well into the, again, it depends on what all you include, but it would be somewhere in the 150 trillion up to maybe 230. Again, different economists consider different pools of dollars and make different assumptions as to the rate of growth, et cetera. So in any event, so what do we do? Well, one, we got to invest our money in assets that will return higher than average rates of return. We like real estate. Other folks may like oil and gas, or they may like crypto. There's a lot of ways to invest your money. The problem is You don't need a place to lay your head every night if you're investing in an oil well, or those constituents, those customers of that company don't. Now, admittedly, you do need petroleum products to drive your car, etc. It's just drilling an oil well has a lot of unknowns that buying an apartment building that's got an existing set of tenants or an existing opportunity with regard to the market value, it's a little bit better known outcome that happens with that model than it is when you're drilling a hole in the ground that may only get you some water. I've been in those kind of wells. I can tell you it's no fun. And, you know, I've got one interest that still sends me monthly statements from 20 plus years ago where the company, the guy, it's a little, probably a two or three employee company, they've been hauling water out of that well for 20 plus years and getting paid. There's just enough oil, I guess, to pay him because I hadn't had to write any checks. But I tell you what, that was a painful lesson to learn and shall not be repeated in this case. And it's not to say that everything you invest in real estate turns to gold, but again, it's a little different model. And one more time, everybody's got to have a place to lay their head at night. And right now, and for a nice run, actually, the multifamily asset class has performed very well. Well, let's do this. Let's turn back to the Be a Planner Show's news page. Again, that's under the resources tab at baplannershow.com. And let's look at a few of these articles here. And I guess the first thing we'll talk about is the interest rates. Two articles right at the top of that list. The first one is markets wonder if there will be only two rate cuts this year. And I would say even that title is more optimistic than I might be. I did not add the news of the jobs report today, but if I'm not mistaken, the jobs report came in at, 303,000? Let's see if I can put my hands on that real quick. 2 hours ago, here it is on Barron's.com. Let's see. Showed a payroll gain of 205,000. So I'm not sure where. I thought I saw something flash by on my phone updates. Let's see. Let me read down here a little bit further. Well, in any event, it's a healthy picture. It's not the picture you want to see when you're hoping for interest rate cuts. And to say that, you know, it doesn't appear that, let's see, how was that article framed? Markets wonder if there will be only two rate cuts. I you know, more jobs reports like this, more CPI data like we had just recently, you may get one this year. I mean, I don't know. I'm a pessimist on this topic, but would tell you that you can't believe everything you hear, but you can believe the data. And right now, the loudest voice is not the governors at the Fed Reserve. It's the data that they're getting to look at. And the data is currently murmuring that rate cuts will be a long way off and possibly not be the three reductions the Fed is currently promising. Well, I don't know that I've seen what I would call a promise, but in any event, the Fed has more than one mandate. They typically talk about controlling prices via inflation along with supporting full employment, and sometimes the two are diametrically opposed. And you know, if they lower interest rates, it can cause significant inflation. I think most would argue that's what happened in the recent past. And in any event, Tuesday of this week, the yields on Treasury debt maturing in 5 to 30 years climbed to the highest levels this past Tuesday. And that's saying something, because they had already been ticking upward for, you know, most of this year. But to say that they've gone on up to the highest level, it's going to be a while, folks. I mean, there's just no question. The Fed tends to look using a long lens of 12 months of collected data when they decide on rate changes. The numbers had been showing a path of falling inflation growth. Then came December 2023 when inflation rose to 3.4% year over year. In January, it came back down to 3.1% year over year. Then February went up slightly to 3.2%. And then at the end of May, let's see, the core, okay, I'm not sure. They're talking about the end of May. Maybe they're referring to May of 2023. I think they meant March. Let's say January or December, February. I suggest that's a typo. It should be March. The core, yeah, it is March because it refers to the personal consumption expenditures grew at an annual 2.8%. So what does all this mean? Well, the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, has recognized the changes from what the central bank had wanted, but then said two apparently contradictory things in a recent speech. And that's nothing new about that. They constantly do that. First, if the economy evolves broadly, as we expect, most FOMC participants see it as likely to be appropriate to begin lowering the policy rate at some point this year. Then, he says, we do not expect that it will be appropriate to lower our policy rate until we have greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably down toward 2%. So, I don't know. I think it's unlikely. I mean, if we get one cut late this year, that'd be awesome. But two or three, I don't know. The further we go in the year, obviously, the less likely that becomes. But anyway, so watch the calendar. You know, listen to these comments and do some math. If there's a rate cut in July, maybe three are possible for the year. But past that, two at the most, and maybe one. And I would say if you were a betting person, you might go with the latter. But in any event, let's do this. Let's go do another article before we take our next break. Next article is a heavy supply weighs down record multifamily deliveries. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but there was a lot in the pipeline when the numbers started to become more apparent as to the lack of absorption. But in any event, so now again, these are averages. I don't think we're going to get into cities or demographic, you know, markets and submarkets, but multifamily supply overabundance continues to keep owners from seeing the vacancy rates and rents that they might otherwise have. RealPage, that's a think tank, white page or white paper group, had previously estimated that multifamily deliveries would top last year's record-breaking levels by half. I'd say that was a little out of line. But anyway, the effects were already seen in the first quarter. Despite apartment demand recovering to stand above normal levels in Q1 2024, even heavier supply continued to weigh down rent and occupancy figures, according to RealPage. The country absorbed 103,826 units on net. That made the 12-month rate by the end of the first quarter 317,241. That's a lot of supply in the past 12 months at that point. So end of first quarter 23 to first quarter 24. Compared to the mid-2010s, this was 20% higher. That's a big number. A number of factors are supporting the production. They include persistent wage growth, which has now outpaced rent growth for 16 straight months. Solid job growth, demographic tailwinds, and arguably the lowest level of move-outs from apartment units into single-family homes since the Great Financial Crisis. So it's harder. It's harder on a bunch of fronts. It's harder to find product. You know, most sellers are happy with their 3%, 3.5% mortgages. They don't want to give that up and go buy something at 7% or higher. And then, you know, the interest rates themselves are an impediment to the market. Even so, the demand has not kept up with supply. During the first quarter of 2024, developers completed 135,652 units. Looking back over the same 12 months ending in March 2024, there were 479,367 delivered units, a 10% increase over the 12-month pace that ended with fourth quarter of 2023. With the 317,241 unit absorption, that would mean a surplus of 162,000 units. While high, it's still significantly lower than the 530,000 unit surplus of a year ago. New apartment supply continues to be the primary influence on national performance, RealPage wrote. We're sitting at the highest annual supply figure dating back to 1986, when approximately 550,000 new units were delivered. That's a long time ago. Though it's important to note that today's relative expansion rate of 2.5% remains comfortably below the 1986 expansion rate of 3%. So the gap between supply and demand is closing, but it's still enough to restrict rent increases. And RealPage also said that the imbalance is having less of an effect on the occupancy rates. Nationally, occupancy was 94.1% at the end of March, keeping in line with the long-term average. Again, that's average. And none of us are average. We're all normal or standard, however you want to look at it. As one might expect, metro areas with less new supply could increase rents the most easily. Some of the rent growth leaders were Milwaukee, Virginia Beach, Cleveland, which is 94.6% occupied. That's a big number. Washington, D.C., Cincinnati, Chicago, etc. The cities or the metros with the highest amount of new supply saw the biggest drops. Austin rent went down 7.1%. Their occupancy is still relatively high at 92.5%. Jacksonville, 4.8% negative rent change. Orlando, negative 4.4%. San Antonio, negative 4.3%. And they've got a lot of new supply coming online right now. So you got to watch for the absorption statistics there. But they're still at 93.5% occupied. So you're going to see the new units come into the market. It'll be interesting to see how fast they're absorbed and what that occupancy number looks like when the rest of those, I believe it was 18,000 units that were projected to come on board here this year. In any event, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and we'll be back momentarily with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost, and I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life, but I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost, and I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that
did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I wanted to mention, I think we'll just do one more article. Let's see what the time looks like. Got about 8 minutes, it looks like. Let's see, this article is entitled How Airbnb is Going from Multifamily Bad Guy to Landlord Partner. And if any of you have an Airbnb, you may understand that the apartment segment has not been at all pro Airbnb in terms of enjoying any of the fruits of that niche. You know, they've done their best to block tenants from putting their units out on Airbnb. And I guess Airbnb finally figured out, well, let's see if we can't get them to agree to the old adage, if you can't beat them, join them. And so, again, they've rolled a program out where they're partnering with landlords to fill empty units. And so they're trying to convince landlords to embrace Airbnb, and they have a partnership dubbed Airbnb Friendly Apartments, like pet friendly apartments, that would allow tenants in participating buildings to list their apartments on Airbnb, and the landlords will get a cut. Ah, the old financial incentive is going to be used to strike again. They also enlisted one of the biggest U.S. owners of apartments, or they enlisted some of the biggest U.S. owners of apartments, including Graystar Equity Residential and Starwood Capital, and launched November 2022, a year and a half ago. Surprised we haven't seen an article or two along the way, but they started it with 175 buildings and 25 markets. The program has more than doubled in size in the 17 months since it was launched, scaling to more than 400 buildings and roughly 130,000 units. If you're putting it in terms of hotel rooms being added, 130,000 units is not an insignificant number, but it's not like it's, you know, moves the needle a whole lot on the total supply equation there. The growth is great, but it's a low denominator, Stein says. The company has received more than 3,000 requests from landlords to participate. It's a huge opportunity for landlords because consumers are living and working differently these days. They have more flexibility, and with where the cost of living is today, why not monetize your primary home part-time to make some extra income? And this points out something that I'll say about Airbnbs from personal experience. I, have had as many as 34 Airbnb units in the past, and been a super host for ever since the first quarter we could qualify 10 or 12 years ago. In fact, just got our latest notice this month. And, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, I will take a 12-month tenant any day of the week, or preferably a midterm tenant. That'd be a travel nurse, a military trainee coming into San Antonio for the medical educational training complex. That's not basic training. That's advanced training, where those folks get as much as $130 a day lodging stipend, and we can work with you on that level, by the way. And in any event, those are 6 weeks to 6 month stays, far more attractive, far more lucrative, and give us the ability to make $4,000 and more on a two-bedroom unit for a month. I mean, when you think about that, that's significantly more than most multifamily. That's even more than, well, it's more than all Class A, not most Class A. And so that's the preference. But, you know, the way I look at Airbnb, those little 3 and 4 night stays, like, for instance, this week, we've got a very full house due to the eclipse. As you may or may not know, San Antonio is a desirable place to be for that. And, you know, if you're full, it helps take some of the sting out of the extra intensity of the effort to do meet and greets. You know, if you got a lot of your units being occupied for the weekend, that's a lot of incoming to do a meet and greet since we've got gated property. And so I would tell you that cutting your costs, they say it a little differently here. They say earning a little extra income is desirable. Well, I would tell you it's more of a way to cut your holding cost. In our case, thankfully, we do enough filling the pockets of time blocks that we have to basically cover our property tax experience. So I'm not looking to our property tax expense, rather, over the course of a year. I mean, $100,000 or more most years, I'll take it. But I don't like it, and I wouldn't set out to simply own an Airbnb, which is, I think, a lot of people, kind of think the having a nanny flat is really cool. And it's not till you understand, of course, having one would not be a problem. That'd be like a nice hobby, perhaps. But when you look at the as a business where you've got many units, keeping up with all the different components of those bookings, of communications with the incoming tenants, and we're as good as it gets. We got 24-hour coverage since I'm overseas most of the time. My business partners, they're on the ground in San Antonio, and we do very well. We don't even think about Superhost anymore, whereas in the early days we were always stressing, trying to make sure we didn't irritate any of the guests or didn't know what was normal. Whereas now, trust me, when you've got as many as we do, we don't let those with the sour grapes slow us down. And people like Airbnb know us. They know we know what we're doing, and they cut us a lot of slack anytime we get the errant complaint. And people don't stop and think, well, gee, there were 25 other guests last night, and funny how none of them had the problem you claim to have had. But anyway, I think this is interesting, and if it helps landlords cut a cost somewhere, it's better than the unit sitting empty. And I think that's what this article really is saying. And this is great for the multifamily property that has the ability to not have to go add a bunch of overhead to accommodate those Airbnb bookings. Well, I think we're there at the end of the show, very close. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up, and thank you for tuning in. And if you have any questions or things you'd like for us to address in the future, feel free to text me at 713-581-0195. Or go to the baplannershow.com website and fill out a call request there at the right side of that homepage. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.